And start. Mission What's start.
Up? Hello, everyone. This is episode 5 of Celtic Week.
It's episode 5, and we still feel terrible from St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. We overdid it.
Too many Irish nachos.
And yet, which are just, cheese fries. Yeah. So but, I can't tell if that's like a bad joke because the fries are potatoes.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know.
Come on, guys.
I don't know. And then I also had those fried mushrooms, which I... So generously returned
to the earth
many hours later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I puked a lot. So much.
Good times.
Good times. Yeah. Yeah. I did feel better.
Good.
Maybe that's the key to all of life's worries. You know, you feel bad, just go throw up.
Just throw it up, baby.
Yeah.
Just throw it up.
Just expel, along with the bile, all of your fears and worries.
Mm-hmm. It all just comes out.
Yes, it does.
It's a good thing.
Anyhow, we hope things are going good for you, the listener. We got into a little bit about, you know, the pantheon and some of the main cycles of Celtic mythology in the last couple of episodes, and we've touched on druids. Everybody wants to know about druids. I mean, it's one of those, like, I feel like most people have heard the term at least.
Oh, yeah. I heard it a lot.
I'm pretty sure it's a D&D class, isn't it?
Possibly.
Druid?
I don't know my D&D that well, but it might be.
But I'm pretty sure. Anyhow, it's not really that far out of the mainstream. You know?
Now, there's still many practicing druids today.
There are, yeah. So of course,
it's not a
the practices
thing.
Themselves, I'm sure, have become a little more civilized.
Yeah, kind of cooled it with the human sacrifice thing. But
yeah, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But what's the deal? What's a druid? Is he like druid? Gandalf? Because when I hear druid, I picture like a wizard.
Yeah, I always pictured, you know, something like that, some mystical...
Well, that's the thing is like they're often depicted like in, you know, in some like medieval tales, they're kind of it's almost like a caricature. Like they're usually depicted as being like these spooky, dark wizard, sorcerer type characters who are, you know, like afraid of like Christianity and Jesus and are like unholy and
we'll get into that, but not that far off. It's also not that far on. So,
well, let's put it this way. I mean, what does it take to be a druid? Who do you have to be?
You
do you have to get like
be,
a good ACT score or something? Like,
no, you got to be. I guess you got to be lucky. Kind of, you're born into a high class of professionals. During the time, people didn't really, you know, climb the social ladder.
There was no real social mobility.
It was more. You're born there, you stay there. So. Yeah, so they were mostly high-class professionals, religious leaders. They were medical professionals.
Doctors, lawyers, like politicians. They distinguished themselves in careers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
but you know, they weren't just, you know, religious leaders. They were also I would say their main job was more like, you know, social cohesion.
Yeah, they organized all the festivals.
Have to oversee. They would kind of. The whole point was to kind of hold the social fabric together, and you know, religion and worship and sacrifice to the pagan gods was all bundled into one. You know, because they believed for their society to succeed, they needed to be in good standing. Essentially, the funny thing is, you know, even though these people were professionals, and you know, you can bet that they were educated. In whatever form of education they had in their society, but there was something. It's not clear. It was part of their doctrine. Basically, was they could not write down, like they couldn't keep written records of themselves and their practices.
Yeah. Did you ever come across like why? Like what was the reason? Because I knew it was just a reason, but
see, that's the thing. They didn't write anything down, so there's no way for us to know.
Yeah, I guess.
but that's the main theory. Is there must have been something that sort of flew in the face of written records because
yeah,
almost, I mean, pretty much nothing has survived except for, you know, just the reason we know about them
other
are,
people.
Yeah, other right. people who ran into them and were like, I met this wizard. He was sacrificing babies.
Yeah.
It was bad.
But then you have to think, is all the information that we have true? Because, you know, one of the most prominent people to keep records on the Druids was Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
he was one of the first to encounter them.
Yeah, a lot of people could be
from the Romans
projecting their idea of like what they consider barbarians onto the Druids.
True, and also
it might not all be accurate.
Well, also it's kind of good for the PR of invading of the Romans invading these supposedly barbaric societies. It's good for like the PR campaign because they can look at it and be like, look, they're sacrificing human flesh.
Yeah.
They're monsters. We have to go in and stop them. You know, so yeah. I think that was part of it too. It was like if they had gone over there and everyone was chill and, you know, just like offering up like free candy, then they'd have a hard time justifying
yeah,
as
you
much.
Couldn't convince the people like we're gonna have to kill all these really nice guys that yeah. give us candy.
Yeah.
No.
Well, the thing is, well they you know, the Romans were primarily responsible for pushing the most of the Celts, kind of oppressing them, taking over, you know, all the mainland populations, and like we've talked mm-hmm. about, the insular Celts, which are, you know, just think British Isles basically, they happen to kind of muddle through because it's harder to invade across the ocean, like we talked about. So yeah, they got a bad rap. The Druids were used as like the main like boogeyman of like this is the worst of the pagan worship. They became like the poster child of some kind of unholy, you know, pagan corruption. So mm-hmm. when you're reading like a medieval tale, you know, they'll mention like Druids and they'll usually make them out to be like, you know, monstrous people, basically. I mean,
yeah,
I would say they were viewed kind of like how witches were viewed in the Middle Ages and onward.
Yeah, little bit.
Or like among the colonial populations, like, you know, they're doing dark things in the forest. Like,
yeah.
It was that kind of thing.
That is that is where they like to do their dark things, though, in the forest. That's
and the caves, yeah, forests and caves and
yeah.
mountains. And
the etymology of the word druid is unclear, but there are several theories thrown out there that it means oak knower or oak seer because they preferred to do their deeds in clearings of oak trees.
Yeah, trees in general were a big deal.
Yeah, also some people have theorized that it could mean sorcerer. Derived from some ancient language. So, you know.
It's possible.
I see the trees. I'm a sorcerer, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But like you said, they kind of like led society along. There was an actual class of nobles who were more like strictly political, whereas druids were kind of like, they handled like, you know, the more nebulous side of things, like mm-hmm. how they should keep to the customs and how
yeah.
they should treat each other. And but the big thing was if you were going to do any kind of big ritual or sacrifice to a pagan god, there had to be a druid there.
Yeah,
like it didn't even count if a bona fide druid was not there to oversee it. Didn't count.
Yeah,
so they were kind of like people's. Yeah, they were kind of like the common person's connection to
yeah.
the gods because. Even if you were really devout in your Celtic faith or whatever, and you just really wanted to like offer something up, it didn't mm-hmm. count unless there was a druid there. So you couldn't really, it wasn't just a matter of holding them together. It was like they needed the druids to feel like their
yeah.
practices were legitimate.
And not also, you know, were they either intermediaries between the divine and people, but they could also apparently determine the future
yeah.
Through observing nature and human sacrifices. So they had some extra connection to the gods that really kind of put them
yeah.
on top.
They had a lot of privileges. Julius Caesar wrote that they supposedly didn't pay any taxes in their society mm-hmm. and they didn't have to serve in their local military. So they were definitely held
what a perk
above kind of a higher standard, and apparently they were so well respected, like even if you had two sort of Celtic like tribes or groups or whatever, even a druid from, you know, an enemy village was still greatly respected by the people in your own. They were kind
yeah.
of set aside. It was like, this is the one thing you don't do. You don't kill druid. Like even if they, you know, there are accounts of like, if there are you know, battles or skirmishes that about to go on between two Celtic groups that just by showing up, a druid could just, you know, show up and get in the middle of it and be like, no. And they wouldn't, you know, it was like pretty much taboo to hurt a druid, so they just had to kind of go home.
Yeah,
so they had enormous power. And they also had the power to, like, excommunicate and, like, banish people from the religious events and, by extension, from the society because the two are so closely connected. And it makes sense because if to be a functioning part of the society, you have to be able to participate in, like, the worship and the sacrifices and everything like that. If you can't participate in those, you're bad for the society.
Yeah.
You know, to have people who weren't doing their part could be seen by the others as, like, you're going to bring bad luck on us. Like, you're going to bring something down on our heads by doing that. You're going to have to get out.
See you later.
So, an enormous amount of power. But yeah, they were taught kind of secretly in the caves and forests. It wasn't something where it's like you could pick up a druid textbook and, you know, learn the ways. Like, you had to be in it.
Yeah,
and well, if you weren't, you didn't know crap.
Because they couldn't keep anything written down. So all their traditions and their learning all was done orally. So they had to, you know, sit and learn all these rites, traditions, what have you, and then they had to learn to recite them. And
yeah, they were taught in verses.
Yeah, and it's
like a poem, kind of like it was like a holy or sacred. You kind of just memorize, which I guess that's how it just told you everything you had to do. Which, if you think about it, is pretty incredible because it'd be really hard to. I mean, you're memorizing all of that, but then you also have to kind of pass it on. And maybe that was part, you know, maybe that was part of why they were seen as so important, is because there wasn't a written record, so the knowledge they had was that much more valuable, because it was like every druid that dies, it's harder to pass on that knowledge. It's harder to keep it intact.
Well, yeah, and there's so much that it says it could take up to 20 years of studying to kind of learn it all and, you know, have it all down to where you could pass
decades.
It on. So it's a lifelong commitment. You're in it to win it.
And that just adds to the respect. I mean, well, if you think about it, it's kind of like how we view, you know, doctors and lawyers today, because part of it is they have all this extra education they have to have.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's some kind of level of respect of like, well, they went to med school or they went to law school. I think it's kind of like that. It's like they've studied this for decades.
Yeah, they've like devoted their life to this, so yeah, like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's like an impressive thing. But yeah, a big part of the sort of the big PR campaign against druids was that they were known to be practitioners of human sacrifice.
Yeah, which, I mean, can you blame them?
Well, it's actually harder to blame them when you learn more about, like, their beliefs regarding the soul, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
Because they clearly, I mean, I still blame them, but they clearly saw all of it very differently than we do. In fact, well, you know, there was such power that, you know, they could basically kind of pick and choose who needed to be sacrificed. They preferred to use criminals if they could. Like, if you had been convicted of, you know, stealing or killing, you know, a person or, like, livestock, if you were just a criminal, then you were kind of, you went to the top of the list to be recycled, basically.
But if there weren't any criminals available, they'd be like, yeah, we have to get this done. So
yeah,
we're just going to use an innocent person.
Yeah, somebody's got to go. I'm really interested. I'd be interested to know how they chose.
Yeah, if they're
Did they play like Duck, Duck, Goose?
Or
like,
yeah, because I mean, if it's an innocent person, you know, what criteria do you go by? Because they're not a criminal. So are they retarded?
I don't know.
Dumb? Like,
We don't have proper written accounts. It's impossible to say.
Damn. Should have written all this stuff down, guys.
Well, they had a few. It's hard to know exactly what the methods that they used were, because you have different people who encountered them and then made their own record of what they saw the druids doing. So, but some are considered more reliable than others.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, there's one account that, you know, says that they used something called a Wicker Man, which, not to be confused with the Nicolas Cage movie, which is an awful movie.
Not the bees.
Yeah, the bees. They basically like construct like a wooden effigy, which is like a model, it's like a person shaped sculpture kind of around, or they put a person in that and then they burn that.
Or I've also read multiple people, like, they would build a large effigy,
Yeah.
And they would put multiple people inside.
Depending on the requirement of the sacrifice. So, yeah, burning alive. But the thing is, you know, there's no way to verify. And I think there's a particular text called the Commenta Bernensia. You could read it yourself, but it's one of those old texts where none of the words really,
that's just notes on classic Latin texts, so it's probably not a thrilling read.
Yeah, and the account in that referenced the concept of the threefold death, which it's kind of a vague concept, but in terms of like the practical side of it, of why they would do the threefold death, it was designed to appease specific gods.
Yeah.
It was like a type of offering in a way, but the method was important. These gods, I'm just going to read it like it seems like they might be said, Tutatis, Isis, and Tyrannus. But they would use three different methods. They would do some variation of drowning, and then hanging, and then burning. Whether they like killed the person with the first thing, and then just did the other two for like, you know, ritualistic purposes, I don't know. It wasn't clear. I would imagine that they kind of drowned them for a bit, and then they hung them, but not to death. And then the burning was probably the final thing, because you can't really,
yeah,
come back from the burn. Like once you burn,
that's true.
You know, it's the burning.
You're done. But yeah, those would go. Yeah, to each form of torture, death, execution would be specific to that.
It's a different type of offering.
So the drowning would be an offering to the first god, Tutatis, I guess. And Isis would he would get the hanging and the flogging. Mm-hmm. They would often beat him too. And then the last god, Tyrannus, who was a god of thunder, actually, he would get the burning alive.
There you go.
I guess they all have specific fetishes that need to be met. So
I don't know, but the funny thing, well, not funny, but the weird thing is like they.
Oh yeah,
they,
you think it's funny?
Well, it's like there's the benefit of for them of like we did a sacrifice, the gods are gonna love us. But as you know, as Krusty said, there's also a future. There's like a mystical use for because not just for people, but also for animals. They sacrifice animals. Which makes you wonder if animals were fine for some of the rituals, why not just use animals for all of them?
Yeah.
I don't know. But they could use sort of even like something as specific as how a victim would spasm upon like being stabbed to death as a sacrifice. Even just like the particular way they moved could supposedly reveal something about the future.
Yeah.
Or
I
like
have
the
quote
sound
here
they make. So
from one of the, a Greco-Roman historian's account of the Druids and says that, for their very important matters, they prepare a human victim. So I guess that's why they have to use humans, because if it's so important, they got to use a human. It says, by plunging a dagger into his chest, observing the way the limbs convulse and he falls, and the gushing of his blood, that's how they're able to read the future.
Yeah.
And also, it says they can read, or they can predict by just observing the flight and calls of birds. Yep. And sacrificing holy animals. So,
yeah. So there's all kinds of ways. And well, the thing is, there wouldn't have been any way for anyone in the society to dispute any of it because it was a secret, like art.
Yeah, they did this.
Only the Druids knew. So there was no way to like check their notes and be like, well, maybe you should have done this.
Yeah.
So tremendous amount of power. As far as you know. The general belief, and this is, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, they believed in what is sometimes referred to as the Pythagorean doctrine.
From the Greek philosopher Pythagoras?
Yeah, the Pythagorean theorem is like the triangle formula that you learn in geometry.
Yeah.
Same guy, but...
He was a multifaceted person.
Yeah.
Math, philosophy, he was in it all.
So. Yeah, and basically one of the tenets of that, the most important one, in the case of the Druids, is that a major concept was that the soul is immortal.
Yeah, it'll pass on after death. Like with the death of the body, doesn't bring the death of the soul.
Right, it can come back.
Mm-hmm.
They believed in reincarnation.
Yeah, the Druids were kind of split, but they were really tolerant. So like you could believe that you know you'd be reincarnated possibly into an animal or another human.
Yeah.
Or some believed that you would just your soul would go on to the other world. Which we have mentioned in previous episodes.
Yeah.
But
either way... But
they didn't fight about it, which I think is nice. It's strange to see such tolerance
Well, I think that's why it was so easy to sacrifice a person, because they didn't see the person as really dying, because to them, they for sure believed that the soul was the important part and that that was going to be fine.
Well, did the people that they sacrificed, were they also druids? Because they might not have, they would be like, man,
no, they definitely, no, they wouldn't have sacrificed other druids. Definitely not.
Well, yeah, so then to them, I guess they see it, but the person who's getting sacrificed is like, I don't believe that shit. My soul's going to die, man.
I don't know. Yeah, and I was reading something that was like, a big part of it was like, it, you know, part of the reason they would get everyone, or they would, so they would really push the idea of your soul will live on, is because they believe, you know, it kind of gives you a certain level of courage that you can't get from anything else, because it takes, basically it took the fear out of death.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, I'm going to die, but if that doesn't mean the same thing to you as it does like to us today, what do you have to be afraid of? And the answer was, theoretically, nothing. So the druids were top dog. There are actually three classes of the Celtic priesthood. There are also bards and vates, I guess. It's spelled like vate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I figured that's how it's pronounced.
Those the other two, though, were much lower. The bards were the lowest, for sure. But they were just more like,
you know. But they're important.
They are what they sound like. I mean, you know, like poet, musician, singing the exploits of great heroes. They're almost more like historians in a way.
Yeah,
with a musical edge injected.
Yeah, they bring the story in and turn it into something easier to share with others in the form of song, stuff like that.
So. Yeah. So, but they didn't really have any kind of real authority. They were considered to be kind of like lesser artists, lesser poets. Like they just fulfilled a function.
Yeah, they were just basically. Like, yeah, we write the songs, they get all the money, like, whatever.
Yeah, and the Vates, on the other hand, they could actually, they were considered to be, like, prophets or, like, seers, kind of.
Mm.
So they could sort of participate in the future viewing, but they still needed a druid. But they could perform rituals, like sacrifice, I guess, but it had to be under druid supervision.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, like, halfway sort of to being a druid, but not they didn't have any real standalone authority.
Mm. Okay, I gotcha.
Well, I wish there was more stuff. There had been some cool
the Vates,
written accounts.
I could be wrong on this. The Vates of the druids possibly were involved, or it might have just been druids all around, but the ritual of the oak and mistletoe, which was a ritual they used to create an elixir that could cure male and female infertility, which is strange. I feel like back then, male fertility wasn't probably on anyone's radar. It was always going to be the woman's fault. But the druids were very accepting of women. So,
there were female druids as well.
And
we probably should have mentioned that. Yeah, this wasn't limited to men.
This wasn't about
what was, you know, dangling or not dangling down there. It was about do you have this connection to the gods?
Yeah.
And it makes sense when you think about it, because if they believe that the soul can reincarnate as like a man or a woman or whatever, it would make more sense that they would have a little more equality in terms of the soul. You know what I mean? Because like if it doesn't really matter, because your soul is your soul.
Yeah. Then what's the body matter?
Yeah, they accept that sometimes it's in a man's body, sometimes it's in a woman's body. Either way, the soul is important. So
yeah, it doesn't matter if you got a P or a V. It's all about the soul. It's what's inside that counts.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, that ritual of the oak and mistletoe, they would climb up an oak tree and cut off the mistletoe growing,
mm-hmm.
and then they would sacrifice two white bulls and then use the mistletoe to create like their elixir. And it could also cure various poisons as well as cure your infertility. So
yeah.
So they were all about them elixirs, which I mean
like we had mentioned when we were talking about like the shamrock, for instance, where if they found they found like clovers or specifically, you know, a four-leaf clover, that would be like a sacred place that's the kind of place that a druid would go to perform something like that. It's very deeply connected to nature, just like the gods that they worshipped were.
Yeah, they're very big on to nature. So and that's like kind of like the more modern druid religion, and it's part of a neo-paganism that's kind of coming back. Like that's one of like their three goals, is to love nature. Like they're all about loving nature, respecting it, which is all, it's great things. I'm not dogging on it at all. It's great, but that's kind of like what it's built around now.
Yeah.
Or at least one of the three tenets. So.
Well, at least that's the thing they decided to hang on to and not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad the stabbing first tenet of people and like people. Reading the blood and the convulsing.
Yeah. So
some things are better left in the past.
Yeah. It's all about like art and knowledge and love. So it's more of a hippie thing. But
as far as wrong with that. Well, it ties into that the neo-paganism that you just mentioned. There are particular festivals, there are special days of celebration that even today it's still a part of the society, and part of that is because as we've mentioned before, a big tactic of Christian missionaries to kind of work their way into Celtic society was to sort of like join together certain holidays. Like take a holiday, like a pagan holiday, and then kind of like Christianize it, but like in a subtle way.
Yeah, makes it easier to transfer over, I guess.
Yeah, so, well, there's four big season festivals. I guess we just go one by one.
Yeah, let's start with the first one. I'm going to need help with the pronunciation.
It's pronounced Samhain, or sometimes Samhain.
Samhain.
I like Samhain. It's spelled, like I mentioned last podcast, it's spelled like it would be pronounced Samhain. So if you see that, it's actually Samhain.
Samhain.
I don't know why.
Yeah, well, we've gone over this in the other ones.
Yeah, that's part of the
spelling makes no sense here.
Yeah. So. But basically, it's basically Halloween. So what the purpose of the holiday was to celebrate the end of the harvest and the beginning of winter.
Which is October 31st to the next day.
Yeah, so. They celebrated from October 31st to November 1st because for them, a day was from sunset to sunset. So it's like, it goes, like they didn't even think about days in the same terms that we do. So technically their day started with a sunset and then like started with the sun going down and then ran
so
all the way
through. Their version of our midnight was just, you know, 4 or 5 hours before it is now. So,
yeah. But you know,
and clocks back.
And so, well, the idea was like, it's kind of ushering in the darker half of the year, you know, the cold, dark seasons, which would be associated with the Fomorians. You know, you have the threat of like, you know, ice and, you know, famine, you know, blight, like nothing's growing anymore. Yeah. If you didn't harvest enough, you might be in trouble. Even what you did harvest, something could happen to the crops and they could be, you know, spoiled.
Yeah.
Some kind of like weevils. Pestilence. Yeah. Weevils. Who knows?
Who knows?
basically, this day slash night around 31st of October was considered to be sort of a sacred time where on this day, the boundaries between our world and what we've called the other world.
Yeah.
Which is like fairy.
Yeah. And it's world. Like a world like draped over our own. Like almost like a parallel. It's like the upside down, essentially, from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
That's a good way of describing it. But yeah, that was kind of the barrier between those worlds was no longer there, and the beings from that world could come and walk among us
more easily than
they could I guess they could just kind of slip through that membrane a little more smoothly and transfer over. So
in the first season of American Horror Story, there's an episode where all the ghosts that are normally tied to one place are roaming free because it's on Halloween.
Is that the haunted house one?
Season one.
I haven't seen
the
show, but I've heard quite a bit.
I haven't watched it lately, but yeah, I remember that. It was, because, you know, typically we think of spirits as being kind of tied to either a place where they lived or died. On Samhain, all bets are off. Like, they can go anywhere just like a person.
It's like the Purge for ghosts. You know, all bets are off. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, cut loose.
Yeah, spirits, fairies, obviously the pagan gods, and nature spirits as well. You know, certain like forests or trees or whatever could. Or like rivers, landforms would have like a you know, like a lesser god tied to them.
Yeah.
But the idea was, you know, these are powerful beings. They can wreak havoc if they so choose. So they wanted to find a way to appease them, you know, keep them happy so that while they're, you know, on furlough, while they're out and about, that they wouldn't, you know, destroy everything, basically. The big thing was, you know, like I said, survival of the crops that they saved. Good fortune in the tough months ahead, you know, making sure that the livestock survived.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of livestock. They were, I think it's called pastoralism. Is that possibly what it's called? I don't know. They had a lot of livestock. It was a combination of livestock and agriculture. So there was kind of a lot left up to nature. So they really needed, to them, like they needed to be on its good side.
Yeah.
And so we actually get some of our traditions that we still abide by today.
Like leaving candy out in the bowl.
Yes.
But it's not for little grubby snot-nosed kids to come steal. You know, you leave the, oh, please take one sign on so you can go have fun. And some kid's like, oh, I'm going to take all the candy bars. That was definitely me, by the way, yeah. When I was a kid. But yeah, so you don't leave it for the kids. You leave it for the gods and spirits and even souls of the dead that yeah, could come back. They, yeah. You leave out food for them to keep them happy.
Yeah, they would leave food out as an offering. And yeah, it was thought that the souls of the dead came back to their homes. So you might even set like a place at the table for like for a Grammy. Family member that had died. Yeah, yeah.
For
like
Grammy O'Malley.
Yeah, you would set a place for them because, you know, you thought they're coming in to hang out. And then also...
What kind of food do you think they would leave? Like, do you think they would make well, like something
well, it
good?
Would, it would just, nah, well, it would just depend on whatever they had from the harvest.
They would just not like make up a shepherd's pie. They'd leave just like a squash out on the doorstep. Like, take this whole squash.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe, like, do you think they cooked something up like special? If they really, like, all right, this year we've been bad, we really want to appease the gods and spirits.
I don't know. I have to wonder if they had the luxury of, like, choosing what special culinary delicacy they wanted to prepare. Like,
yeah.
you got to keep in mind, they were living a little bit rough.
Yeah, they definitely didn't have, you know, they couldn't go down to the grocery store.
They couldn't hop down onto, you know, Trader Joe's and, like, pick up a, you know, like, there wasn't.
He was just like, well... only the squash made it this year, so hope you like squash.
I'm sure they had a good supply of meat because of the livestock, so
true.
Maybe a nice steak. I don't know.
Yeah, or did they just want the steak for themselves? Once again, guys, you should have kept records. Whatever rule. If you are joining a religion and they're like, all right, the one rule is you're not allowed to write anything down, don't join that religion.
Or just do it secretly.
Yeah, true. And then be a hero to people like us in the future.
Yeah,
so.
But also the tradition of wearing costumes comes from the Celtic people because there were multiple reasons. Some it would be like to kind of imitate, but also honor and like kind of you know kind of like be flattering to the spirits of like look at me,
yeah,
I'm powerful and scary. How great
form of flattery. So.
Yeah. Or on the other hand, to hide yourself from wicked spirits, wicked gods. Like if you dressed up like one of them. Maybe they wouldn't come get you. Like they wouldn't come after you.
They'll just drive by and be like, "Oh, that's Bob." Like, yeah, he's cool.
Yeah. So you would disguise yourself as like a monster or whatever, and we do that today. We dress up in like Frankenstein.
I wish that there were photographs of these costumes. I would love to see.
They were probably horrifying.
I know they were probably like because they're handmade.
Have you seen the ones from like the 1950s mm-mm. here in America?
No, not
like there was something there was a few, and even those were much creepier than the ones we have today.
Wow, man, I just love to see it like something made out of like corn husk and you know crazy scary stuff.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of stuff made out of like wicker and stuff like that. Yeah. I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. Well, this year maybe we should do some research, try and make some traditional. Halloween or Samhain costumes.
We'll do a Samhain cast.
Yeah.
But the way that one I know particularly got sort of Christianized was that the missionaries basically came in and were like, okay, so the 31st and the 1st, that's where you celebrate Samhain. What a coincidence. November 1st is also All Saints Day.
Oh.
And All Hallows Eve the night before.
Yeah.
So they did the same thing. They were like, oh, we celebrate those days too. Why don't you come over and bring a casserole? It's going to be great. We'll play bingo. We'll play yacht. You know,
we'll have a potluck. Have some candy.
Play some Pictionary. Like, it's going to be good.
Have a trunk or treat for the kids. It'll be a blast.
Yeah, so they kind of like co-opted it. And then, you know, Halloween, it was All Hallows Eve. And then it was Hallowed. It was like Hallows Even, like for evening. Mm-hmm. And then it was Halloween, like E'en. They took the V out just to shorten the word even, and that became Halloween. So Halloween is actually Halloween, or even. Hallow's Eve.
Interesting.
So little fun fact tidbit
little
for you
there.
That's honestly my favorite of the four.
That one's pretty cool.
It is cool.
I like
but obviously, it's not the only one. There's also Imbolc, which we briefly mentioned when we talked about St. Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
Imbolc. It's I-M-B-O-L-C. Imbolc. Yeah, it's basically the beginning of spring.
Yeah, it's February 1st. I just guess I don't think of spring starting that soon. But
yeah,
it did. It did this year.
Yeah, it did that. Actually. Well, it kind of warmed up pretty quickly lately.
Yeah, how's the weather, guys?
But so, and we talked about this, that same day is St. Bridget's Day for Christians.
Mm.
So that's another obvious way of coincidence. Well, and it goes even further because, like we mentioned, that St. Bridget, if she was real, because again, we don't have full confirmation of that.
Yeah.
But that, you know, there was a Celtic goddess named Bridget. And she was a goddess of fertility. And February 1st, they celebrated her.
That's her day.
So it's like, and that's what, for me, it seems, it's either a crazy coincidence or some really good, like, PR posturing by the Christians of like, we have our own saint who even has the exact same name as the goddess they're celebrating. Oh, look, we celebrate on the exact same day.
Yeah.
That kind of makes me think that maybe she wasn't real. I don't know.
Hmm.
Because, like, how convenient is it? But I don't have. Know.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
It could. Stranger things have happened. We'll say that.
For sure.
But yeah, it's up in the air.
Yeah. So Bridget was a goddess of fertility. And I mean, I'm sure you'd agree. The big thing for these people was like good harvest.
Yeah.
Healthy livestock. Being able to have lots of babies.
Yeah. You just wanted to work eat the as much fields as you could
until well after midnight. You know, you need to. Yeah.
You got to eat and make sure you got lots of babies because most of them are probably going to die. So you got to have some.
And if you have enough of them, maybe through some kind of freak stroke of luck, one of them gets to be a druid.
Yeah.
But probably not.
Probably not, but yeah, it could happen.
It could happen. It wasn't likely, but it's possible. A big thing was making Bridget's crosses. Well, that's what they do now. And also then, but don't get me wrong, it doesn't look like a cross. To be honest,
yeah,
it looks like another symbol that is not favorable. Eh. In some ways, but the point is, it's like a spiral.
Compare it to that, but it's definitely the arms aren't twisted or bent. It's just a
there's one less
picture
bend.
A square.
Yeah, there's one less bend in the arms.
Yeah, picture a square, and then out of each side of the square, an arm is coming out, but at different ends of the square. So it kind of has like a spirally look. So it's the same like principle as a cross, but shifted a little bit.
Yeah, and all the arms are of equal length, so it's more like this. Like it almost looks like a ninja throwing star.
Yeah, it looks more like a throwing star than a swastika. So,
but yeah, so you would make some of those, and then they would also make basically not a wicker man, but a doll, like an effigy of Bridget. And the idea was you wanted her to visit your home so that you could have blessings and fertility and. You know, so they would, like, make the doll and then have, like, a little, you know, like, parade and walk it down the street and be like, oh, she's coming to all your houses. And this is actually similar to with Samhain where they leave out offerings. You might leave out food for St. Bridget or just Bridget, depending on how you were viewing it, because the two kind of become, like, similar things. But, you can put out some milk and cookies or some people would actually make a bed for her in the house.
Oh, so she's sleeping over too.
Yeah, as if she was coming to the house and sleeping. You could also lay out like some pieces of clothing, and then she might bless them and make them lucky. So you would like wear the lucky shirt.
So that's where you get your lucky shirt.
Yeah, it was a way of like soaking up
your lucky clogs.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And it was also a good time for divination. They would have these things called holy wells.
Yeah.
Which I guess you just go and like
you get dipped in.
Yeah, you just look into the magic water. Any of these big seasonal holidays, Samhain, and probably Beltane. Those two are, I would say, the ones where like the barrier to the spirit world most strongly comes down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that same concept still applies to the other seasonal festivals, just not quite to the same extent. But yeah, the whole idea was like. It was kind of like Santa in a way. It's like someone's coming, leave something nice for them, and they'll give you what you need for the
year. Yeah,
they'll
hook you up.
Yeah, they would. So that's Imbolc. Spring's coming, you know, sort of that dark half of the year. is starting to get on its way out. It's really more like the very, very beginning of spring, because the next one, which has a lot of, like, you know, the name is like anglicized, as you might say.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just pronounce it as Beltane.
Yeah.
Which is, it's basically May Day. It's the May Day festival. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, spring is, you're going into summer. Basically, each one of these like kicks off.
Yeah, it's a summer fun blast kickoff.
Fun event. In the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you got your ice cream stands, snow cones, you know.
You think they
lawn
had
games.
You think the Celts had snow cones?
Probably.
Possible.
I mean, if they got lucky enough, you know, if the gods smiled in their favor.
Yeah, if you left out your best striped sweater and then St. Bridget blessed it and then
wake up with the
free
snow
cones
in your
for
bed.
A year.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
It gets hot sometimes. So,
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, the May Day celebration, beginning of summer, cattle went out to the pasture around this time of the year.
Yeah, they
so
released
they needed,
them to basically go and get fat off the grass,
yeah.
I guess.
So they wanted to make sure that all, or as most of their cattle survived as possible. So they needed this celebration to kind of bring luck to their herds.
Yeah. Yeah, you want them to all come back if possible.
Yeah,
so.
you don't want to lose any. You're probably going to lose a few, but you want to minimize it as much as possible. So they threw this this big event. They had bonfires, and the bonfires had like protective powers, some people say. So I guess you light this big old fire, and it kind of, if you do it right, I guess, because you know you can't do these things wrong. If you do it right, it will protect you, and I guess your livestock also.
Yeah, well, fire had like like a holy quality to it, I guess, mm-hmm. Because. Like we said, kind of like Samhain, this was a day when the barrier kind of came down. So just as on Samhain, with winter coming, you wanted good fortune and protection from, you know, bad spirits and bad forces, you also wanted your, you know, your cattle to have that same good luck, and you wanted to appease any bad mojo that was floating around out there for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, the sacred bonfire, sometimes they would just kind of like have the cattle like around it, and then... like, I guess the smoke and ash, it was all sacred, so as long as you like got in its presence a little bit, it would help.
Yeah,
sometimes they actually had their cattle run and jump, like, through it.
Through a ring of fire.
Yeah, I guess. I know that they would, like, lead them through so that they would, like, get extra protection.
Wow.
You have to wonder, though, if they just set their cow on fire by accident.
Yeah, they're like, never mind. It has to be outside. I forgot. I was
but
mix up that
well,
part.
Maybe they would lead the cattle first because they also had a feast. So, like, that way, if one of the cattle gets burned and dies,
like, oh,
you
this
just
is
cook
the
them
one
up.
That we eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you already make the food and then you actually burn your cattle,
yeah.
That's extra meat that you don't need and it's going to spoil.
That's true.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, fire was a big protective thing. And what they would actually do is they would light this big bonfire and then they would kind of get torches, I guess, and light the hearths in their homes, like their own fire. From the bonfire, and that was like a blessing on your home.
Yeah, you're taking the protection home with you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Getting a security system installed.
Yeah, and another big thing was putting yellow flowers on things, possibly because the color yellow had some connection to fire. I mean, some fire is yellow.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, you put yellow flowers as like a protective, you know, sort of a good luck charm.
Yeah, you wear it on your pocket and ward off evil spirits and... all
yeah.
that good stuff.
So they would just feast and party and, you know, everything's getting warm and they're getting ready to put the cows out to pasture. Yeah, it was a good time, I'm sure.
That sounds like a fun one. I like the summer stuff.
Well, you know, we should do that. We should have our own version. We won't burn any cows.
No, we will not.
But why not have a nice little May Day feast?
Yeah, we get a big bonfire going. We we bring our dogs.
Make sure we get
around
a burn permit.
The fire. Around the fire, not through. Around, protect our animals. Wear some yellow flowers. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, we bite the dogs. Time. We don't burn them.
Oh yeah, right. Right.
No, we don't bite dogs.
Well, what's how do you pronounce this this last festival?
Well,
here?
As you can see,
lasagna.
Basically, lasagna. No. If you have been here for the full Celts Week so far, you heard us talk about Lu, who is like this sky, sun, storm. Type god. One of the good guys.
He's a badass.
He's a badass warrior.
Has a lot of magical weapons.
And he has his own day.
Yeah.
It's just called Lunasa, I'm pretty sure.
Ah.
You
could see how I got lasagna from that.
Yeah, well, it sounds,
with the way Lunasa they spell, or with the way they pronounce.
Well, it's Lughnasa. So
yeah,
you might see it and be like, it's Lughnasa.
Lughnasa.
But it's just Lunasa, I guess. Okay. I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
one day I'll have these pronunciations down pat. Right now, I don't.
Yeah, right now we're just a bunch of amateurs. But yeah. when does Lunasa start?
It's around August 1st.
Mm.
Or so exactly August 1st.
This is a harvest festival.
Yeah.
Because right now we've gotten like the end of the harvest and like summer. Yeah, we didn't
really
spring.
Go in like calendar year order, but that's just because Samhain was my favorite, so I wanted to start.
Yeah,
that
yeah, we do this. Yeah.
But yeah, Lunasa would be around August 1st. So,
yeah, this one I'm assuming is going to be kind of to appease the gods and bring luck that they have a good harvest this year.
Yeah, that was part of it, and then it had a big connection also.
I guess they're worshiping Lu.
To Lu. Because part of his so what you have to know is he was kind of like I wouldn't necessarily liken him to Prometheus, but in the mythology he was a provider for humanity. He liked humanity for the most part.
Yeah.
So there's lots of like ritual sports, athletic competitions on Lunasa, but also. It's also like a fun but commemorative celebration for his mother. In the lore, his mother, I don't know exactly how, I'm just going to tell to you. Tell to you.
Yeah, that sounds good.
In the lore, supposedly his mother, Tell to you, died from exhaustion after clearing all of, I think, Ireland for farming land. Like cleared... like trying to help humanity, cleared all the land so that it could be farmed, and then died from the exhaustion.
Wow.
So that it was like, you know, commemorating like...
her sacrifice.
Yeah, did a good thing for us.
Thanks, Mama.
Yeah, Mama and T. So they would do all kinds of honoring, you know, and they would also... matchmaking was big around this time.
Hmm.
So setting you up with your true love or possibly your worst nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, possibly the worst thing that ever happened to you. You have to wait and see, so...
Yeah.
That's the beauty of arranged marriages, though.
Yeah, but it was also... so what they would do is, like you said, they wanted to be on Lu's good side, specifically Lu, so they would offer him sort of the first fruits of their harvest.
Classic offering on a harvest festival.
Yeah, like as soon as they get something good, they're like, oh, this has to go to Lu.
Yeah.
Good old Lu.
The cream of the crop, if you will.
Yeah.
So,
And then they would also sometimes sacrifice a bull.
Yeah.
Which, as you mentioned, that was, one of the more special animals.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the oak and mistletoe, right?
Yeah, they sacrificed two white bulls for that.
Yeah,
so.
Bulls were a solid offering to the gods, unless you specifically needed a human, in which case they weren't good enough. But
yeah.
So they would go, they would sacrifice a bull, they would offer the first fruits of the harvest, and they would do rituals in the hills and mountains. Because, like we said, the mountains and the forest, everything, it was all kind of a sacred place. And that could be connected to the fact that in the original, like, in one of the versions of the myth of the Tuatha De Danann, the gods coming to, you know, the British Isles, basically, migrating over, specifically Ireland, I guess, but it was all kind of one big wave. But one of the versions of the legends has them arriving on storm clouds that came to the mountains.
Yeah.
From the storm clouds. So mountains are kind of like a big special place. So they would go up and do rituals specifically like a
in
play.
The mountains.
Yeah, but they would do like this play dance, this dancing play ritual, like acting out a show to like tell the story, because they were counting on Lu to defeat the forces of blight and famine.
Yeah.
To make sure that, like, for instance, you know, some kind of crop failure didn't come and kill all their crops while they were trying to harvest, you know, because you got to get it right during that sweet spot.
Yeah.
But you can't collect all your crops in one day unless you have, like, a really small crop. So they wanted him to ensure, you know, because it's starting to get colder and there's not, I guess, you know, there's probably not quite as much sunlight. And, you know, that's when, you know, conditions start to get worse for agriculture, so they would call on Lu to come and defeat the forces of, you know, blight and famine, so that mankind would have a bountiful harvest.
Mm.
Thank you, Lu. And so they would, like, by acting it out, it was as if he was doing that.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
Good guy. Lou's a good guy.
He is a good guy. One of my faves.
He's got a magic spear and
got a sword.
Yeah.
He's got some cool stuff in his
apparently, he's also got a chain that he swings around.
Something kind of like nunchucks almost, maybe. That's what I was picturing. I don't know. We'll see.
Possibly. There are actually a good number of sort of Celtic traditional festivals, but those are the big four seasonal ones. So you can, I think, hopefully that they've gotten a better idea now of like the connection of how the people would celebrate their connection to the pagan gods and try to get some good stuff out of them.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? Is your favorite also Samhain?
I'd probably have to say Samhain. Yeah, definitely. And
part of that
favorite.
Could just be because Halloween's a big deal here.
Yeah, it's the most like something we have
connected.
Today.
So. It's also just the coolest. Like, I don't know of any of these other ones where you get to dress up like a monster.
Yeah.
For the purpose of, you know, and appeasing monsters, leaving or out or hiding
and
or
stuff like that. That's just a hoot, man. It's a good time.
Some fried green tomatoes.
Yeah. Just all the classic Irish.
But definitely not
dishes.
Fried mushrooms.
No.
Anybody out there listening, eat any fried mushrooms for
steer
a while.
Clear. Yeah. In honor of
I gotta wonder if the crop of the mushrooms wasn't ruined this season, because I did not have a good experience.
Did you act out a play dance to Lou?
I should have.
You should have.
Damn it.
Wow. Big mistake there, buddy. Big mistake.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe we can do a Samhain cast this year. That would be fun.
Yeah. What would be cool is if we did like an event where like not just Samhain, but like we kind of collect all of the
like
otherworld type holidays. Yeah, like all things connected to that, and we do like a big, I don't know, we'll figure
it
out.
We just do a big cultural appropriation blowout.
Yeah, basically.
There we go.
Basically.
I like that.
Sounds it'll be good. Anyhow, that's episode 5.
That's it, baby.
We got 2 more. We hope you're enjoying Celtic Week. We hope you had a good St. Paddy's Day. What are we talking about tomorrow?
Tomorrow we will be exploring some spooks. In the haunted places throughout Ireland and Scotland, maybe England.
Yeah,
I don't
but
know.
Primarily Ireland.
There's
and
a
Scotland.
Cool like couple places that I might mention, but yeah, mostly Scotland and Ireland. Yeah. So that'll be a good one. Be sure to
catch
that.
Yeah, we got some
that.
Cool legends. Yeah, so, it'll be good.
Yeah. So. All right, well, thanks, everybody.
We'll
get
see
home
you tomorrow.
Safe, I guess. Yeah.
See you tomorrow.